Hey guys, what's up? Kevin Jones, founder of Blue Wire. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Do me a favor, send it to one of your friends. We're growing this network, grassroots style. It takes everyone. You're a part of our team if you send this to one of your friends. All right, enjoy this podcast and appreciate your support.
Fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast. Thank you for joining me again this week as we take you through the latest news, analysis, and game action surrounding our Chicago Bulls. And I say game action there in my opener, but thank goodness we no longer have to pretend to care about that now that the season is done. Thankfully, we finally made it to the end of this long and painful season, and thank you all for hanging in there this long and following this team, but also tuning into the show during this mess. Now, I guess that we're done with this season, we can relax a little bit here, but I suppose before we completely move on into draft mode and off-season mode, it does make some sort of sense to go back over the year that was. And joining me today and going down this dark path of misery is none other than Sean Hyken of Bleacher Report. Sean, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Mate, I know you haven't probably been covering this season as I hope not for your sake at least, as diligently as you probably have been in years past. But I guess we've just come off listening to John Paxson give his end of the season press conference. So I didn't necessarily think we were going to be talking about that, but given that we've literally just only witnessed that only hours before, it probably makes sense to start off the top here with what John Paxson sort of had to say in his end of season press conference. And I know you did happen to tune into that. So what did you make of the Paxson presser?
Well, it's kind of about what you would expect from one of these things. And I covered a number of those in a row when I was on the Bulls beat. There's, you know, a whole lot of pointing to injuries. That, you know, that's usually a big theme. And then, you know, they're talking about, you know, we want to be patient. We want to, you know, do things the right way. That's always kind of a theme. There's all, you know, it's all kind of the same stuff every year in terms of just, you know, pointing to why it didn't work and pointing to why, you know, it's going to work better next season. You know, there's always the high draft pick. You know, we're going to have a high draft pick this year. Just kind of all the stuff you would expect. Now, obviously, the big news that came out of it was him basically saying that, yes, Jim Boylan is going to be back next year. And then that was followed pretty soon after the press conference by Joe Cowley at the Sun-Times reporting that they're close to doing a three-year extension with Boylan. So that's really the most newsworthy thing. But other than that, it's just kind of the stuff you'd expect.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you mentioned it there. I was going to bring it up later. But Jim Boylan, it sounded like that was going to be the case anyway, that you could just sort of glean from the way Paxson talked about him in the past and just the way, I guess, even Michael Reinsdorf sort of spoke about him in glowing terms that he was likely to be brought back. But Paxson basically hinted as much. And then to your point, Cowley basically confirmed, or his sources are suggesting, that three-year extension here for Jim Boylan coming in pretty quickly. So that was definitely the biggest news coming out of it. But I guess the other thing that I took away from it was that Paxson was very adamant that the injuries were the reason for the completely derailed season. And I sort of get that and understand that. But I guess my prevailing thought when I'm hearing him say that is, when was the last time the Bulls didn't go through a season where they weren't completely ravaged by injury to some degree? So I don't understand this theory that next season that it's just going to be fine, and that if they're injury free, that it'll be all rosy and they'll be hunting towards the playoffs.
Yeah, and the other thing, it's not even just when have the Bulls not plagued by injuries during a season. When, name a team you can think of in the last year, several years in the NBA period, that hasn't had at least one injury to a key player at some point. Like, the Pacers lost Victor Oladipo for the whole season, and they're still, you know, in the playoff mix. You know, there's so many, like Brooklyn lost Caris LeVert for a lot of the season. They lost Spencer Dinwiddie. They're still in the playoffs. I'm not suggesting that the Bulls should have made the playoffs, because obviously this team isn't very good even when they were healthy, but I just don't like the idea that, oh, you know, the reason that this season didn't go well is because there were injuries. Like, that's And I don't know, that to me, that's just sort of that just sort of rings hollow. And to me, that's sort of a way for them to basically deflect blame and saying, hey, it's not our fault that the season went sideways the way it did, as though it wasn't them that decided to sign Jabari Parker and thought that was going to be a good fit. And then, you know, handled the Hoiberg, you know, the coaching change and the installation of Jim Boyle in the way that they did. And just kind of all this other stuff. But like, I certainly agree that injuries played a part of it. I mean, the fact is Lauri Markkanen only played one game before Hoiberg got fired. And then LaVine and Porter missed a bunch of time at the end of the season. And Wendell Carter missed a bunch of time, you know, basically starting in January, he missed almost half the year. And so, you know, there is definitely something to the idea that, yes, they probably would have won more than 22 games if they hadn't had this spate of injuries that they had. But I don't think it tells the whole story to just point to all of that.
No, certainly not. And I mean, whilst I certainly agree with that, Paxson did allude to the fact that he doesn't think there's much that could be done about this, that the injuries that the Bulls sustained were freak incidents, you know, things that you can't necessarily protect against. And I sort of understand what he's getting at there, but he also did go on to mention that he feels like the training staff and all the medical team around him, that their protocols are top notch. They're amongst the best in the league, and all the players really have to do is just turn up in the off season, work out in Chicago, and follow the protocol set out there by the Bulls medical and training staff, and they probably won't be hurt as much. Maybe I'm paraphrasing a little bit there, but that's the sentiment that Paxson was pretty much saying.
Yeah, I thought that was a little bit weird of a comment to make, basically saying that it's on the players to prepare better or work out better so that they don't get injured. I thought that was a little bit weird, and I don't know if I would have gone there if I was Paxson, because these injuries, it's not like there's a pattern of, like, you know, this particular injury, like, you can point to, like you know, Lauri Markkanen, if only he had worked out a little bit differently, or if he had done a little something different in practice, then he wouldn't have had that freak elbow injury during training camp. Like, this is, you know, when you're playing a sport, whether it's basketball or football or whatever, you're going to get hurt at some point. Like, it's just a thing that could happen. And so, you know, saying that, oh, he should have just not gotten hurt, like, I thought that was a little bit weird. I'm not overreacting to it as much as, like, I think some, you know, corners of Bulls Twitter, when that comment came out, it was all like, oh, he's just completely blaming the players for getting injured. I don't think I'd quite go that far, but I just thought it was a little weird.
No, I certainly agree. And the weird part to me was the fact that he basically alluded to the strength and conditioning staff, that had Lauri not gone through that and bulked up the way he did in the offseason, that he may have missed the full season with the elbow injury. I don't know where that came from. That seemed kind of off the cuff there by Paxson, but that was, I don't know if that's actually true or not, that he would miss an entire season because of an elbow injury, but that was kind of one of those stark moments in that press conference where I sort of actually, my ears perked up a little bit. And I was thinking, what the hell is this guy talking about here?
Well, that stuff was a little bit weird, but the comment that really stood out to me, and this was just kind of an off the cuff thing, or just kind of an offhand thing, you know, people sort of brush past it, when he was talking about why Boylan is so great and why he's the right coach for the team. He was talking about how in 4 months he's had more communication with Boylan than he has with the last two coaches. Now, obviously, we know that by the end of the Thibodeau era, he and the Gar and Pax were just, like, basically not on speaking terms.
Yeah.
So that part of it wasn't a surprise. But the fact that, you know, Hoiberg was their guy, he was handpicked, he was there, they basically didn't put him in a great position to succeed for so long. And then for Paxson to come out and say today, you know, I've had so much more communication with Boylan than I did with Hoiberg. I get what he was trying to do there, and I think he thought that would be seen as, oh, he has so much communication with Boylan, that's why this relationship is so great. But I almost think that it says more of the other way about, you know, why wasn't there better communication with Hoiberg? And, you know, I'll bet, you know, I wonder if he was trying to, you know, throw Fred under the bus there, or if that was what he was implying. But either way, the whole press conference, I mean, as predictable as it was, a lot of my biggest takeaway is that the whole thing was just weird. Like, all the different things he said, that, you know, the way he tried to paint certain things, it was bizarre.
He was in a surprisingly good mood as well, which I found weird. I'm not used to seeing Paxson look comfortable and smiling and jovial and all these sorts of things. So I wasn't sure what was going on, but he seemed really quite comfortable, which, you know, you go back to the trade deadline where he was sort of accusing the media of, you know, basically accusing of him, you know, being interrogations almost rather than interviews. It seemed like a different John Paxson here.
I thought that was so laughable when he did that, because, yeah, like, I don't think any of the questions that anybody's asking in these press conferences, or that Danny Parkins was asking on that score interview that he kind of had that that whole moment at, like, I don't think any of the questions that people are asking were unfair or were out of line or were personal. These are the kinds of questions that, you know, when you're the president of basketball operations for an NBA team, you get paid a lot of money. And part of getting paid as much money as he gets paid is you have to deal with, you know, the kinds of questions that are going to come at you about how you're doing your job. That's just part of the job. This is what you sign up for. And like for him to basically say, like, oh, every time you ask me this, it's an interrogation. Well, it's because, you know, the results of these last few years have been what they've been. That's why people are asking all these questions. All these people, you know, if everything, you know, works out amazingly, like if the Bulls, you know, get to the playoffs next year and they're seriously contending to even get out of the first round, like, you know, get to the second round, or, you know, they look like they're in the mix. I think a lot of these media people that he's accusing of just kind of complaining about whatever they do, I think these people will all be lining up to give him credit if that happens. It's just a matter of, you have to look at, you know, the past evidence of how the last few years have gone and, you know, how things project to be in the future. And you don't see that as very likely to happen. And so it's worth asking some of those questions.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. I definitely agree with that. And look, I'm just being cynical. I just wonder if, you know, the way he performed in, you know, January, February, if someone had got into his ear and said, you know, maybe take a different, a more tactful approach in this press conference here at the end of season one compared to how he performed on radio maybe a few months back. But again, that's me just being cynical. Maybe he was just in a good mood. Maybe he's just happy like us that the season is over. But I guess the other thing that was interesting or of note was the fact that Paxson wasn't so cagey around what his expectations were for Chris Dunn. He made it pretty clear that Chris Dunn needs to improve. It sounds like he'll probably be back next season, but he will be back and be facing a lot of point guard competition, whether that's through the draft or free agency. But Paxson basically was pretty clear that, you know, Chris Dunn, he needs to shape up pretty quickly or he's going to be out the door pretty soon.
Well, that was just kind of a political answer. He's not going to come out and say, look, we're just done with him. We're moving on from him. He's not going to say that with the draft and free agency and that whole window coming up, because I'm, you know, in an ideal world, like, I'm sure it wouldn't take that much. Like the Bulls are extremely listening to offers on Chris Dunn. If any team wants to call and offer anything of any value, like whether it's any kind of, you know, young player who could be decent or any kind of draft pick, even, you know, not even a first, maybe even a couple second rounders, it probably wouldn't cost that much for a team to get Chris Dunn as it is. Like his value has never been lower than it is right now. And so if Paxson were to come out and say, oh yeah, Chris Dunn is not going to be back, we're moving on from him, then his value goes even lower and they don't even get to get anything for him, probably, because every team in the league knows that they're just going to try to move on from him at the soonest possible moment. So he has to put up the perception that, hey, you know, we still believe in him, he's still in the mix. But yeah, from everything I've heard and people I've talked to in Chicago and people I've talked to in the organization, I think they're pretty convinced at this point that he's not going to be a long-term piece. Now, who is going to be the long-term guy? I'm not sure going forward. I know Ja Morant is a guy that they've scouted pretty heavily. And if they get, depending on how the draft lottery shakes out, and, you know, assuming they don't get the number one pick, and obviously if you get the number one pick, you're taking Zion. But if they don't get the number one pick, I think Ja is probably the guy they're going to target. And I know free agency is kind of an area where I've heard that they're going to look for a veteran point guard. I would think a guy like Patrick Beverley would make a lot of sense. So I think there's a number of different ways they could go there. But I don't think Chris Dunn is a guy they see anymore as part of the core the way that they do, you know, a guy like a Zach LaVine or a Lauri Markkanen or a Wendell Carter. Whereas at the beginning of the season, I think they were still holding out hope that, you know, Chris Dunn could be part of that group that was going to be there for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, and to your point, Paxson basically alluded to the fact that they will be chasing veteran free agents in the offseason. So we should be expecting maybe one, two, maybe even three, depending how they cut up that $20 million in cap space, to be bringing in some veteran free agents here. And you mentioned Patrick Beverley. That's an obvious name, and a name that makes complete sense given the point guard situation. But did you see Dunn's comments, you know, a couple of days ago where he mentioned that he didn't know that the situation was going to be where there would be multiple ball handlers on the floor, that therefore, had he known that, he would have prepared differently in this season, for this season rather. Like, did you see those comments, and were you as baffled by them as I was?
I did see that, and you know what? And this is when he's, you know, I kind of vaguely saw those comments. Was he talking about at the beginning of the season he didn't know what it was going to be, or is he talking about kind of towards the end? Because I want to know, is that a shot at Hoiberg or is that a shot at Boylan?
Well, my interpretation of the quote was he was coming into the season thinking, you know, he would be the lead ball handler. Things diverted eventually through or away from Dunn through to Lowry, as they obviously should, but he did mention that he didn't realize that this would be a multiple ball handler situation. But so irrespective of whether it was, you know, at the start of the season or the end of the season, I don't understand how you can come to the conclusion that in the modern NBA there would literally only be one ball handler. That was, you know, really, really quite some sort of quote from Chris Dunn. It blew my mind.
Yeah, I thought that was a little bit weird too, I guess. But I mean, this goes back to my last full year on the Bulls beat, which was the three alphas year. A whole bunch of different guys on the team, you know, some of those young guys, whether it was Bobby Portis or Denzel Valentine or, you know, whoever, you know, any of those guys, a lot of them had said at various points that it wasn't Michael Carter Williams, whoever, like, it wasn't really clear to them what their role was, and that hadn't been communicated to them directly. So some of it maybe still that, like, maybe that was still an issue with Fred Hoiberg, and maybe that was one of the things that led to him getting let go. But yeah, if you're Chris Dunn, I mean, especially when, you know, he had such a bad rookie season, then he made some strides last year. He didn't have a great year last year by any means, but he showed, okay, he's an NBA player, he's not a complete bust. So, but yeah, you have to be preparing for multiple different scenarios, like, and you know, then especially after they make the Otto Porter trade and they completely change kind of the rotation and all, and, you know, and all this kind of stuff, like, you have to be more ready than that. So I thought that was a little bit of an interesting comment from Dunn, but either way, I don't think he's going to be a huge part of their plans. I mean, he'll be there next year probably because he's under contract for one more year, which is basically what John Paxson said today. He literally said he's under contract, and so we expect him to be back. But if a team decides, okay, maybe we can take him as a reclamation project, I don't think it would take too much twisting of John Paxson and Gar Forman's arms to get them to pull the trigger on a trade if they can get anything at all back for him.
No, certainly agree, and it's certainly shaping up to be that way. But let's move away from the Paxson process, because, like, there wasn't too much to glean from it. But let's just talk more about this wasted season, I guess we can call it that, this disjointed season. That was Paxson's words. But very simple and very high-level question for you, because I have no idea what the answer should be to this question. But what the hell are we meant to, or what the hell are we supposed to make of this mess of a season? Is there anything to learn or to take advantage of at all?
I mean, I think there are positives you can take away from it, but overall, it definitely was not a good. Forget the wins, the number of wins and losses. Like, the Bulls have the fourth worst record in the league. They're trying to get a high draft pick. They're in a pretty good position to win, you know, to do well in the draft. Like, that, like, that's fine. The end result is fine. But a lot of the stuff, you know, between, you know, the dysfunction and, you know, the mutiny and all that kind of stuff in the first week with Boylan, and then the amount of injuries that they had. I'm not saying, like, oh, this is an excuse for why it is. I'm saying this is stuff that happened that is not good. Like, if your team is going to lose a lot of games, you want to at least be able to say, okay, but these young players got better in this specific way, and these guys who are going to be our core, you know, learned how to play together, and, you know, they developed chemistry. Wendell Carter and Lauri Markkanen were on the court together for like a month at most after Markkanen had his came back from his injury, and before Carter had his thumb injury that put him out the whole season. So, like, you don't even have, like, you can point to, oh, these two really developed some chemistry throughout the year. They traded for Otto Porter. He looked like he's going to be a great fit no matter who else is around him. You know, he really transformed their team. And then he missed basically the last couple of weeks of the season, and maybe that was just them holding him out, trying to lose games. But you don't want to just not have any of these guys play with each other. I mean, the losses themselves are fine for, you know, your lottery position, but you want to have had your guys have experience playing together, and they didn't really get as much of that as you would hope that they would. And then, you know, even secondary guys like Chandler Hutchison, who showed some promise during the time he was able to play before he missed the second half of the season, or Denzel Valentine, who was a guy who I thought had a pretty good year last year and then didn't play at all this year. Like, you can really have to take away from it. Like, they kind of stagnated, as much as there were some positives. Like, you know, I think LaVine had a pretty good year. Obviously Markkanen had that great month of February. He really showed, you know, if he can do what he was doing that month consistently, he could be like a perennial all-star type of player. Otto Porter looks like he's going to be a really good fit going forward with this group. But those are all just kind of small flashes of, like, this is a positive thing. There's certainly nothing to make you look back at the season and say, well, they're definitely in a good place going forward, like I would with another rebuilding team like Atlanta or something like that.
Yeah, 100% agree. And this was meant to be a year of development. And I said that at the start of the season. And obviously, it remained the case throughout the season. But to your point, we barely got to see the core guys really function together, which unfortunately was the theme of last season, which is, I go back to a point where I mentioned before, is, When was the last time we saw the Bulls not be riddled with injury? This was the theme last season, where Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, and Lauri Markkanen barely played enough minutes together. we came into that into this season wanting to see how that three-man unit would really combine and sort of function going forward. We obviously didn't get to see much of it because Dunn and Lowry were injured throughout the season, but then obviously you add Wendell Carter to the mix, but then he gets injured.
Basically, except for Robin Lopez, who's apparently Iron Man. Wait, shout out to Robin Lopez. Yeah. Like, he's such a good soldier throughout this whole thing. It would have been so easy for him to just ask for a buyout, and they probably would have given it to him, but he was just like, no, I want to be here. I want to be with these guys, and he just kind of stuck to it. And like seeing some of these lineups that they were throwing out by the end of the season, where the starting lineup was like Archie Diacono, Jakar Sampson, Wayne Selden, whoever, and then Robin Lopez. Like, you got all these G League guys, and then you have 11-year NBA veteran Robin Lopez, who has proven to be a solid starter throughout his career. It's like one of these things is not like the other.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully for his sake, he's picked up a few extra million dollars here and there for, you know, showing out and showing that he can, you know, put up, you know, 13 points, 5 rebounds, something like that. Maybe he's earned himself an extra million or two on his contract for next season going forward. Hopefully for his sake, that's his just reward for putting up with this nonsense.
He's made it sound like he wants to come back.
He does sound like he wants to come back. It'll be interesting to see what the Bulls want to do with Robin Lopez. It'll probably come down to price, obviously, but given Felicio has been this bad and, you know, you can't necessarily rely on him being your backup center, they do definitely need a backup center, whether that's Robin Lopez or someone else. That's a hole they need to fill in free agency. And I don't know why you wouldn't bring back Robin Lopez, given his status as a veteran and the fact that locker room respects the hell out of him.
Yeah, I would look at that. I think Taj Gibson's another guy who has Bulls ties, obviously, who would make a lot of sense. He probably won't cost much more than the minimum at this point in his career, and I think he would want to come back, and he has about as close to a 100% approval rating among teammates, fans, and coaches that there is. So, like, that would be a move that I think would make a lot of sense. But if they wanted to bring Robin Lopez back too, he's just, you know, he's a good locker room guy, and he, you know, on the court, you know what you're going to get out of him. He knows what he is. He seemed like, before Wendell Carter got hurt, he seemed like he didn't really have a problem coming off the bench for a 19-year-old rookie. So, if they wanted to bring him back, I would certainly not think that was a bad idea at all.
No, definitely not. But a guy that they won't be bringing back, or look, at least I hope they won't be bringing back, is Jabari Parker. And how quickly we forget about the Jabari Parker experience. And I want to take you back to last July or somewhere in that range, July, August, whatever his presser was, his introductory presser. But when he declared that players don't get paid to play defense, was there any chance this season wasn't going to go to the shit after he sort of said that? I mean, it just felt like once he sort of said that sort of thing, just the negativity of this team really ramped up, and it sort of just kept going even more after that. Obviously, the injuries started to climb in afterwards, which didn't help the situation as well. But how quickly we have forgotten the Jabari Parker experience and how bad it got off in July.
Well, most people kind of, as soon as they were even rumored to be interested in talking to him, most people were kind of like, wait, why are you doing this? This is like, that makes no sense, especially when you consider, A, you know, their two core guys that they're building around at this point are Lauri Markkanen, who's a power forward, and Wendell Carter, who's a center. They still had Robin Lopez. They still had Bobby Portis, who obviously they traded later on, but at the time, they still viewed him as a guy that was going to be there going forward. Jabari Parker had proven over the last couple of seasons in Milwaukee that his best position was power forward. And now you're going to bring him in when you have this crowded front court. You're going to have him play small forward. It was basically a PR move, just like signing Dwayne Wade was a couple summers before, where they're just like, oh, he's a Chicago guy and he's a big name. You know, this will sell some tickets and this will get the casual fans excited. That's really why they brought him in. And I give Fred Hoiberg a lot of credit for seeing that, you know, the Bulls, that the front office wanted Jabari to play small forward, and for Fred to just be like, no, I'm not doing that. Like, that makes no sense. And then Fred basically pulled the plug on that experiment after like two preseason games. So, you know, I never thought that the Jabari thing made sense. But then when he said the they don't pay players to play defense type thing that he said, like, I was just like, okay, this is not going to go well.
No, it certainly did not. And to his credit, he lived up to that. He was true to his word. So I guess he deserves some sort of praise for at least being honest.
Yeah, what you see is what you get. And he's been playing decent since he got to Washington. So, you know, good for him, you know, getting. I mean, that's the thing is, I think some people wanted Jabari to do well because by all accounts, Jabari's a really good dude. And like, he does a lot in the community, and he's not a bad guy. And so people weren't like, when people were talking, like, criticizing the move, it wasn't because they don't like Jabari Parker or think he's a bad guy, because obviously he's, you know, he has a lot lot of off the court things going for him, you know, that speak to his character and whatever. But it was a terrible fit for the Bulls from a basketball standpoint. And, you know, I think the front office should have seen that from day one, because it seems like everybody else did.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and another thing that we've sort of forgotten about, we forgot a little bit about Jabari here, but another thing that we forgot about was, it's, for whatever reason, this storyline sort of went away in the last few months of the season, but I want to talk about the leadership committee. But before I do that, I want to tell the listeners about this week's sponsor, which is Ethos Life Insurance. GetEthos.com. Life can be stressful, but getting life insurance shouldn't be. That's why there's Ethos. Ethos is a modern kind of life insurance that's super fast, incredibly affordable, and very uncomplicated. At GetEthos.com, there are no medical exams for policies covering under $1 million. No hours of paperwork or meetings with pushy representatives. It only takes 10 minutes to apply, and you can be rest assured knowing you've taken steps to protect your family. And in most cases with Ethos, you can have the peace of mind for less than a cup of coffee a day with no hidden fees. Having life insurance can free you from stress. Getting life insurance shouldn't cause it. Discover how uncomplicated life insurance can be at Ethos. Get your free instant quote and submit your complete application in minutes. Just go to getethos.com. That's E-T-H-O-S. Getethos.com. Getethos.com. Back to the show now. I want to talk about the leadership committee and the fact that it disappeared after 2 to 3 months. I want to know what happened to it, Sean. Why did we start forgetting about the vaunted leadership committee that sort of was put in place after that fateful December run? Where did it go? And is it going to be a thing next season?
Well, everybody who was on the leadership committee, like Justin Holliday was on the leadership committee. He got traded. Yes, Bobby Portis, I believe, was also on the leadership committee. He got traded. Wendell Carter got injured. Like, it just kind of disappeared. But I thought that was just ridiculous on its face when it happened. It was clearly just like a PR thing after the first week of the Boylan era, when they get blown out by 56 points, the Celtics, and the players want to not show up to practice. And like, they were just like, oh, now we're starting a leadership committee to communicate better with the coaching staff. And it's like, I mean, it seems so long ago, but there was a week where the Bulls were the biggest laughing stock in the league after all that after all this stuff happened. And then, you know, Boylan was, you know, talking about double lose and like he's juiced and jacked, and Chandler Hutchinson's soul is awesome. This is the one thing, you know, however you feel about Jim Boylan as a coach, like nobody that they could hire as a coach is going to be better for content than Jim Boylan. Like he's got the Boylanisms. Like he's like the Yogi Berra of NBA coaches. He just has so many great quotes that you can just like that are just going to be enduring for a long time to come.
I go through stages with it. Like there are moments when I'm thinking this is hilarious. This is so good. I'm glad that we have, you know, at least we have this sort of nonsense to sort of pull us through these down periods. But then there are other times, depending on my mood, where it just triggers me and I get absolutely shitty about the whole thing. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? What do you mean preparing the children for the road? And what does that even mean? I don't get it. But oh man, he's an interesting character, that Jim Boylan. But we'll talk more about Boylan a little bit later on. I've got a whole section on him that, that unfortunately we'll have to get to. But another thing people forget is Carmelo Anthony was a Chicago Bull this season, even if it was for the briefest of moments. But the Bulls management finally got their guy. They finally got Carmelo Anthony to, well, he didn't necessarily walk through the doors, but
he did not even walk through the, I don't think he set foot in Chicago one, because I remember when that trade happened, they didn't even like make him take a physical. I don't think he set foot in Chicago. No. But I almost wish, just for the sake of entertainment, they should have just like had him suit up for a game and just threw him out there, and you know, just to give the fans something to, like, who have been there, because you know they still, I'm sure they still have all those billboards like put like up in storage somewhere of when they, you know, put all the billboards up around the United Center when they tried to recruit him in 2014. That's you know something that you know, it would have been a good like self-aware moment for them to do that, but that's just not really what the Bulls do. But yeah, did you see Melo, Wade, or Melo, LeBron, and Chris Paul all sitting together at Wade's final game in Brooklyn last night?
Yeah, I did see that, and I saw Melo getting ready to jack up that shot in typical Melo fashion. That was pretty funny, actually.
Did you see Melo on Desus and Mero a couple weeks ago? Do you watch Desus and Mero? Do they have that in Australia?
Well, we definitely do, but no, I don't. I didn't see that. What happened?
Well, it was an interview, and he seems like he's just like loving life. I'm sure he would like to get back in the NBA, but if you're Melo, like he's made so much money, he's got a good life. He's got other interests outside of the NBA. It was a little bit weird for him to go out the way he did, where it was such a disaster, his brief stint in Houston. But It's like the Melo era for the Bulls. Like, I almost wish, because remember over the summer when, you know, the Thunder did the trade with the Hawks to basically offload his contract, and then the Hawks immediately bought him out, and then the Hawks Twitter account sent out, like, got a Carmelo Anthony Hawks jersey made up and tweeted out, like, thanks for the memories, Melo. I almost wish the Bulls social media team had done that just to have a little bit of fun with it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we deserve that. After getting rid of Jabari Parker, who better than to bring in than Carmelo Anthony, you know, the 10-year-old version or 10-year older version of Jabari Parker. That would have been nice for us to have, particularly after all the stuff that's sort of gone on from 2014 as onwards. This management team were very keen in getting Carmelo Anthony. So it kind of would have been poetic for him to go out, or, you know, his last team to be the Chicago Bulls, and to be wearing that Bulls across the chest as he sort of exited into his retirement there. But we didn't necessarily get that, unfortunately for us.
How do you think Carmelo would have felt about Jim Boylan making him do push-ups during practice? How do you think he would have reacted to that?
Not favorably, I'll put it that way. He definitely would not have been doing it. Carmelo doesn't seem like the guy that's going to be working out extensively on his body throughout an NBA season. I don't know if he would necessarily get into push-up position or doing star jumps or anything else that Jim Boylan would have his players sort of having to do there. I don't think Mallow's the type to subscribe to that pretty easily. But look, who knows? Maybe Boylan would have connected with him. Maybe he would have been able to talk him into it. Maybe Mallow is the road dog that we didn't know he was, but who knows? But we do know the players on this roster and how they reacted to Jim Boylan. The one that was probably the most vocal about how things were playing out and how he didn't necessarily feel about it, or, you know, feel so strongly about it, was Zach LaVine. And it was interesting to see his relationship with Jim Boylan sort of mature over the season. It was quite frosty at times, and we basically had Zach LaVine calling out Boylan, saying the way we're playing or the way we're running things is, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, I'm putting words in his mouth, but he's basically saying it was ridiculous. He was alluding to other sort of rebuilding teams that were playing the right way, getting up and down the court pretty fast, shooting threes, playing a modern brand of basketball. I can only think he had the Atlanta Hawks in mind. But it was interesting to see that we moved from that position where Zach LaVine was quite critical of Jim Boylan and his coaching philosophy, to the point where Zach LaVine was actually at one point offering to pay Jim Boylan's fine after he got a technical foul. So it was weird to see their development in terms of that player-coach relationship.
Well, it's just going to be a certain amount of whiplash in terms of you know, going from such a mild-mannered guy like Hoiberg to the exact polar opposite, which is Jim Boylan. So I'm sure a lot of these players are, you know, I don't think there's anybody left on the team that played for Tibbs at this point, you know, going from it's not just like, oh, this is a coach with a little bit different personality. This is like the two exact opposite ends of the spectrum, Hoiberg and Boylan. And so, you know, Hoiberg, you know, he was going at him, you know, one way, you know, he was approaching things a certain way. And then, you know, you go from that to the exact opposite, a guy who's like making guys run suicides and do push-ups and have 2.5 hour practices after a back-to-back. And it's like, you know, you can totally understand why these players are going to be like, what, you know, what is this? Like, who is this guy? Why should I listen to this guy? And then I don't know. I mean, it's just kind of with any new relationship. I don't know how much of the improved relationship between Jim Boylan and Zach LaVine, I don't know how much of that is real and how much of that is just kind of they both realized it was in their best interest to, you know, put on a good face publicly from a PR standpoint. I would guess that there's probably still a little bit of, like, if you asked Zach LaVine and made him, you know, drink truth serum, I think he would probably rather have a different coach than Jim Boylan. But the mutiny stuff kind of stopped after that first week when, you know, Boylan calmed down a little bit. And you know, players kind of just started to realize, okay, this is just how it's going to be now.
Yeah, I mean, it was a completely weird situation, the whole thing from the mutiny onwards. But the best we saw of Zach LaVine and the best we saw of Larry Markkanen was in February when the offense opened up. It seemed like Jim Boylan had relinquished his release on the team somewhat, and we got to see them really perform quite well in that February sort of 10-game sample. Now, a lot has been made about that, which I want to touch on a little bit later on. But do you subscribe to this theory that Boylan needed to come in and be that kind of aggressive, that, you know, in the same way that he needed to because of what Hoiberg was? They really needed a complete 100% shift in terms of the other direction. Do you think that needed to happen? Do you subscribe to that theory, which I know certain segments of the fan base do? Or do you sit back here and wonder now that the season is done and just wonder maybe if Boylan didn't necessarily go full psycho straight away and maybe approached it a little bit more tactfully, that maybe that February sample that we saw, you know, that 10-game sample, maybe that could have happened a lot sooner if things didn't get off in such rocky fashion?
I will say this. I knew Boylan a little bit from when I was on the beat before, and I always found him pretty normal and easy to talk to, and just kind of I didn't realize, you know, that things were going to go the way that they went those first couple of weeks. So I was a little bit taken aback by some of the stuff he was doing, but I maybe would have like soft pedaled it a little bit. I guess his thinking was like, okay, like I think he used the term shock and awe, like he was just going to come in right away, put his stamp on it. I'm not sure I would have approached it the way that he did, but I mean, that's kind of what his thinking was. Now, as far as that 10-game sample where, you know, they were playing so well, I think most of that was after, you know, the Otto Porter trade happened and the personnel was so different that I don't know if you can really point to, you know, anything that was going on before that and say, you know, okay, this is just not, you know we're not, you know, we're going to, you know, this would have happened sooner.
Yeah, I mean that's a fair point. The Otto Porter trade definitely changed the dynamic of this team. But like, I mean, if I go back to December and January, there was games where Jim Boylan was audibly, you could hear him on the broadcast just basically telling Chris Dunn not to push the ball and to really slow it down and to walk the ball up past the half court line. That's just one example of the dramatic change he sort of implemented versus Fred Hoiberg. Obviously, that's sort of, like I said, he relinquished that somewhat in February. But I guess they're the small things that I'm talking about that. Did we need to go, you know, back to this sort of archaic brand of basketball where for a period the Bulls were actually the 30th ranked offense in the league? They finished 29th in offensive rating, but there was a point where they were dead last in the NBA and were dead last by quite a bit. And I just wonder if we had to go through that complete mess during, you know, December and January. And the reason why I ask that is because that's when we really mainly got to see Wendell Carter Jr. And We forget that we didn't necessarily see the best of Wendell Carter Jr. And I think a big part of that is because of, you know, the point when he was playing with the Bulls is when we were going through this really challenging style of play. What did you make of Wendell Carter's rookie season, and what are you expecting of him for, you know, from next season onwards?
I think he's going to be really good. I mean, you just saw already for you know, there was kind of the fouling issue early on, which is going to happen for any rookie. But just his defensive awareness and his ability to kind of be in the right places is just something you don't really see a lot from a 19-year-old. And, you know, he has a jump shot that looked decent. I think he's going to be a really good player. I definitely think he would benefit from playing in an offense that was a little bit faster paced than what the Bulls are playing under Boylan, whether it's Boylan that is the one that decides to run more, and he's paid lip service to that in recent weeks, or whether, you know, they end up bringing someone else in eventually. You know, I think that would be, you know, him and Markkanen together, if you put them in kind of a faster paced system, I think that would benefit both of them. But yeah, I mean, before the injury, I thought Wendell Carter was, you know, there were times when he looked kind of lost out there, which is going to happen for any rookie. But overall, I think they have to be very happy with what they saw out of him before he had the thumb injury.
Yeah, look, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think he is the best prospect on this roster. I know most people probably won't agree with me given the season that Larry Markkanen had, and even Zach LaVine. I think he sort of redefined what his baseline of best case scenario could be. But I'm very high on Wendell Carter. But I mentioned Zach, I mentioned Larry then. What did you make of their season? And look, Zach was pretty consistent all season, but we saw the best of Larry in February. But what did you generally make of their season, and bringing it back to that February sample? Are we reading in too much on a 10-game sample here and projecting too much based on that, or do you think some of that is justified?
I think when all of these guys are healthy and playing together, I really think the bigger thing was the Otto Porter trade. That just opened up so much for them, because they weren't really getting a lot out of Justin Holiday before that trade. And then, you know, you bring in a guy like Otto Porter, who is a guy who can knock down threes but doesn't need the ball in his hands, and a good defender and can defend multiple positions. Like, that just opens up so much for everybody else. I don't think it's a coincidence that Lowry started playing his best basketball of the season once Otto got there and, you know, was another guy to open up the floor for him. It just kind of makes sense that's going to happen. You know, I think we're starting to see, like, I don't know if you can say, oh, look at this 10-game sample, this is what it's going to be all year. But there are things you can look at and say, okay, these guys play well together. I, you know, it, it's development and, you know, chemistry, that stuff is never linear. I've been around this stuff, the league, long enough to know that it's never, you know, oh, this team showed flashes of this, that means they're going to take a step forward next year. But there's enough there, I think, you can look at and say, you know, if everybody comes back healthy and if things go right, yeah, I could see that kind of pretending to some things, but I don't think it's a guarantee by any means.
No, I definitely agree with that. And schematically and just the rotation itself, it made a lot more sense after the trade, which is obviously a good trade by the Bulls, which is a good segue into the next section that I want to talk about, was the trades and transactions that sort of occurred with the team, ignoring those cash consideration moves. And we talked about Carmelo Anthony a little bit earlier on, but ignoring those sorts of moves where the Bulls were obviously getting in that sweet, sweet cash. They made some pretty good moves this season in terms of the trades they did make. Obviously, you referenced the Otto Porter trade. They sent out Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis to bring in Otto Porter. Obviously, a very significant trade. But we learned this week that it was close to not actually happening. And in fact, that it was reported that the Bulls were very close to making a deal with the Lakers where they would have sent Jabari Parker to the Lakers for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Michael Beasley. So thankfully, that trade didn't go through. And I believe KCP had veto power on that trade. So thankfully it didn't go through, because basically the Bulls used Jabari's contract to bring in Otto Porter Jr. and how differently things look if they don't do that. So that was actually, one, it was a good trade on face value, but when you sort of consider the alternatives, it makes it sound even better.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the other one that they talked about was I think they were talking to the Knicks about a trade for Enes Kanter at some point, which, yeah, I don't know how much sense that would have made. Yeah. The problem with it is that the problem with all of this was that, you know, Jabari making, and I know they love to talk about the financial flexibility and it essentially being a 1-year contract. If you're going to trade for somebody, or you're going to trade somebody like Jabari Parker, that's still $20 million in salary that you have to match. But it's really hard to find guys that, you know, teams that A, are willing to take on that much money, B, that have the ability to take on that much money, and C, that are willing to give up pieces that would actually make sense for the Bulls to take back. I think they found the one trade for Jabari Parker that actually made sense. And the Otto Porter one, I think you and I are on the same page about this, but I saw, you know, some grumbling from some parts of Bulls Twitter when they made that trade, just about how much money he's making and if he's overpaid. And it's like, okay, my whole thing with that was, at the time, is he a little bit overpaid for how good of a player he is? Yeah. But at a certain point, you need to start bringing in good players who are going to help you win and fit what you need. And Otto Porter is a good player who can play well with the rest of their core. And I thought that was a home run trade for the Bulls. And, you know, I thought that the day they made it. And then you saw how well he fit in the next couple of weeks before they kind of shut him down. But I think he's going to be a really good piece for them going forward.
I certainly agree with that. And it's just an interesting sliding doors moment, because I mentioned the fact that they had a deal on place that where they could have sent Jabari either to the Lakers or you mentioned that Enes Kanter deal. But there was also a situation there where had Bobby Portis accepted his extension that they offered in the offseason, then that deal probably doesn't go through anyway as well, because I don't know if a team like Washington are interested in trading for a Bobby Portis if they know he's coming along with a 4-year, $50 million guaranteed contract beyond this season. So, you know, that was a deal that didn't happen too, but I wonder, you know, if Bobby Portis had signed that extension, and maybe we'll find out soon if he should have, maybe that was the best case scenario for him. But it's just an interesting sliding doors moment when you look at the Otto Porter trade as to what happened with Jabari, but not only with Jabari, the other deals that were in place, but two, you know, what would have happened if Bobby Portis signed that extension? We sort of forget about that too.
Yeah, the Bulls have to really consider themselves lucky that he didn't. And he's a guy that, you know, I like Bobby a lot personally, and I think that he's going to, you know, he's still going to be a good player in this league, but I think the Bulls have to consider themselves lucky that he turned down that extension, because I don't know how he would have fit long term, especially at the money that they were going to be paying him. Now, I understand him wanting more than that, but if I were him, I maybe would have taken that money.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know how much he's going to get this offseason, but I don't think he's going to get 4 years, $50 million. And I could be wrong. I always underestimate how much these guys are going to get, and it only takes one team, etc. But I think it worked out better for everybody. You know, Bobby gets kind of a fresh start, and you saw some of his comments afterwards, you know, after the trade, where he kind of felt like he was lied to about, you know, what his role was going to be or whether he was going to get traded or not. And then, you know, the Bulls were clearly not sold on him long term, if they were, you know, if they were willing to trade him. Like, I think it worked out better for everybody, and I certainly wish Bobby the best when it comes to, you know, getting a new deal this summer, whether that's Washington or somewhere else. But, you know, with how good of a fit Otto Porter was, I think it worked out about as well as it could have for the Bulls.
Yeah, definitely. And look, they made another good trade as well, a smaller scale trade, but, you know, trading out Justin Holiday to the Memphis Grizzlies for Wayne Selden, who I think is an equivalent player to Justin Holiday, whilst also recouping 2 second-round picks. That was also a damn good trade too. So shout out to the Bulls for making some actual good trades this season. Something they... We used to give them shit all the time for, but, you know, back in the past, that they never made in-season trades, but here they are making 2 good in-season trades this season. So shout out to the Bulls for doing that. I think that was an underrated part of this season, particularly the Selden deal. You know, that's definitely my lane. Wayne Selden's my guy, so I was happy with that deal. But I think it makes sense, Sean, to really close out this podcast and close out this season talking about coaching. Because to me, that's going to be the prevailing thought that I have about this season. That's going to be the lasting memory that I have. You know, amongst all the mess and amongst all the drama, you know, the Jabari stuff, yeah, that was interesting and fun at the time. We could see where that was headed, but I had no idea how this coaching situation was going to play out. But the thing I'm going to remember most about it is Fred Hoiberg going and Jim Boylan definitely coming in. So let's talk coaching before we close. And I want to start with asking, did Fred Hoiberg get a fair shot at this thing this season? What's your opinion on that?
It's always really hard to assess the Fred stuff, and I've thought about this a lot over the last 4 years, you know, since he got to Chicago. Obviously, those first couple of years, he got kind of a raw deal with, you know, the rosters that they put together. And, like, okay, I think he definitely got a raw deal, and he was always kind of being set up to be the fall guy this year. But at the same time, I mean, they started the year, what, 5-19? You can't make the argument that he deserved to keep his job on merit. I think Fred is a good coach. I also think Fred is not really cut out to be an NBA head coach in terms of, like, the ego management and all the other stuff besides basketball that comes with the job. I actually talked to him the other day after he took the Nebraska job, and, you know, he seems like he's pretty happy with his new situation. I think that's going to be a good fit for him. I think he just wasn't the right fit for this job in the first place. Just in terms of what it comes with and what the expectations are. And, you know, Fred's a good guy, and I think he's a smart basketball coach, and so I kind of felt bad for him. But, you know, it seems like it was gonna go this way sooner or later.
Yeah, look, I'm not surprised that Fred Hoiberg got fired. You could see it coming. If things started poorly, and obviously they were going to, given the injuries that sort of started to mount. You had Larry Markkanen, Bobby Portis, and Chris Dunn missing the opening sort of month or two of the season. Things were obviously going to go pretty poorly pretty quickly, but it's just interesting when you sort of you sort of compare that to what Paxson said today about how the injuries really derailed this season, but Hoiberg didn't necessarily get that same benefit of the doubt, I guess. So that's my issue with the whole thing, I guess. And I don't know if I'll be able to move past it. Eventually I will, I guess. I have to, but I just think it's a bit of a double standard.
Well, do you remember the day that Fred got let go and they had the press conference with Paxson, where he basically said that, you know, they did it when they did it, because if Markkanen had come back, because remember, they fired Fred like one game after Lauri Markkanen actually came back and started playing. And so Paxson was basically saying, if they had given Fred a little bit more time to play with Markkanen, maybe they would have started playing better, and that would have maybe papered over the issues that they had already seen, and then they would have maybe decided not to make the change. I don't know if I agree with that necessarily, but that is their that was kind of their thought process with it.
Yeah, no, I certainly understand that, and I mean, it kind of makes sense as to what they were saying, but at the same time, it just sort of read as, you know, Hoiberg was never Paxson's guy, and, you know, he was searching or hunting out that first moment as to when he could, I guess, find a perfect time to fire Fred Hoiberg, and I guess he found that, and he found a time where he tried to really set up Jim Boylan to come in and to really, I guess, turn things around. And I guess to a degree he did. His winning percentage was better than Fred Hoiberg's. But do you think there's much separation between Fred Hoiberg or Jim Boylan in terms of the quality they are as head coaches? Obviously very different, but are they on a different tier at all?
Well, when they made the change, the first thought I had was maybe this is going to be like, I don't know. Do you remember the 2010-11 season when the Pacers were, you know, below 500, and they fired Jim O'Brien, and then they elevated Frank Vogel to head coach, and they kind of turned the whole season around and made the playoffs after that. I had kind of thought, okay, maybe that's the best case scenario where, you know, this team was underperforming, and then they're going to bring in this guy who's more of like an old school, like hard-nosed guy, and maybe that's going to turn it around. Clearly, after the first week, there was just no chance it was going to go that way. I think that Jim Boylan is very clearly a very smart basketball mind. I obviously read that big Q&A that Darnell had with him over at The Athletic. He knows basketball. He knows what he's talking about. I wonder if he would be the best suited in the role that he was in under Hoiberg as somebody's associate head coach who's kind of in charge of the defense and, you know, is in charge of all that stuff, but isn't the lead voice in the room the way that you have to be when you're a head coach. I wonder if that might not be a better role for him. But, I mean, clearly they're committed to him now. And honestly, like, I saw, you know, the whole Bulls Twitter and Bulls fan base reaction when the Joe Cowley report came out about him getting the extension. I think it's actually good that they're doing that if that's who they want. Like, you and I can talk about whether we think that Jim Boylan should be the long-term coach for this team, and I think you and I both agree that the answer to that question is probably no. But what would it have been accomplishing for them to put him, put him out there and say, hey, this is our guy. You guys have to listen to this guy, but, you buy into his vision, buy into the way he wants to coach the team. And by the way, he's on this lame duck contract making $1.6 million, and we don't know if he's going to be the long-term guy. Like, I don't think it would have done anybody a service to just have him go into next year on a lame duck. So if they feel that he is their long-term guy, and you and I can talk about whether we agree with that or not, but if they feel that he's the long-term guy, then they did the right thing by committing to him and actually putting some money behind it and, you know, giving him that security that usually comes with, you know, when an organization believes in a head coach and actually doing that. So I think that from that standpoint, like, I get what they were doing with the Boylan extension.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it on this podcast before. I think it was when Fred Hoiberg got hired or landed that Nebraska job that if Jim Boylan was going to be back next season, that at least pay him like a regular NBA coach. Don't go into next season having him, you know, only earning $1.6 million and only $1 million of that being guaranteed. You know, pony up at least for one season and pay him $3 million, $4 million, whatever it is, whatever that standard median amount is for an NBA coach. At least, you know, pass off the impression that you actually pay your head coaches at a rate that makes kind of sense. So whilst I don't agree with a three-year term, I get why they would at least want to pay him like an actual head coach. So I don't want to say I'm happy for Jim Boylan, but it makes sense for the Bulls to actually be treating him and rewarding him like an actual NBA coach. And I think that's the only thing I could ask from of that, even though I don't necessarily agree with him coming back. But another what-if question here that I want to ask you is, obviously, they brought in Jabari Parker. He was the main free agent target. But obviously, when the Bulls started really roughly, they were 5-19 under Fred Hoiberg. They didn't have a lot of depth given all that injuries. But I just wonder, had they not signed Jabari Parker for $20 million and have done what they're planning on doing this offseason and bringing in, you know, two or three veteran free agents using that $20 million in space, how different do you think this season plays out? Are they able to sort of sustain these injuries a little bit better and sort of make up the ground a little bit and not necessarily fall to 5-19? And if that takes place, is the whole coaching situation looking a lot differently than what it is right now?
Well, I don't know exactly who was out there that they would have signed at that point in the season. I think the move would have been to keep the cap space open and just kind of do, you know, take on other teams' bad contracts in order to pick up draft picks and basically do what Atlanta did and do what Brooklyn did and just kind of rent out their cap space to teams that just wanted to offload bad contracts and approach the rebuild that way. That's what I would have done with it rather than giving all of their cap space to Jabari Parker basically as a PR move when it was clear from the beginning that he wasn't a good basketball fit. Now, that ended up working out okay because they were able to trade him for Otto Porter, and that is going to be a really good trade for them in the future. But they can't sit here and say they knew that was going to be on the table when they made that trade or when they made the signing. So I the last year at offseason made no sense to me, and it didn't make sense to me at the time. It still doesn't make sense to me, even though they were able to get something good out of it in the Otto trade.
Yeah, I think if anything else, what I'm suggesting here is I'm a Fred Hoiberg stan, and I'm just trying to find it, or I'm just angling my way with these questions. But look, I've defended Fred Hoiberg's on a long enough here. But
you know, I think Fred's a really good guy, and he's a good coach. I think he just wasn't the right fit for this job.
Yeah, I know, I mean, that's fair. I mean, deep down, I'd probably agree with you too. But look, one last question before you go away. You've been very generous with your time, and I think it's fitting that we end this way. But give me your favorite Boylanisms as we sort of head out here.
I think Juiced and Jacked has to be number one. that's up there. I think it's like, okay, that's up there. We don't want to double lose by not being able to have practice the next day is up there. What else? The road dog mentality, bulls across the chest. Chandler Hutchison's soul is awesome. You can't prepare the child for the road. Am I missing any of the big ones?
I don't remember the exact wording of it, and it doesn't have the same catchphrase as a lot of these ones do. But there was a play.
Okay, Steph had an incredible like roundup, or like an article just rounding up of them on The Athletic a couple of weeks ago. It was so good just seeing all of them in one place. When I was younger, I had this book of like all the Yogi Berra quotes, because I mean, you know, all the famous ones like "it ain't over till it's over," or like "if you come to a fork in the road, take it." But there were just so many of them, like there was enough to make a whole book about them. And I wonder if like Jim Boylan, I might start calling him Yogi just because he's like the Yogi
Yogi Boylan
era of the NBA. Yogi Boylan,
yeah,
dude, let's do it. Like I like that.
Yogi Boylan, I'm down with that. It makes complete sense. But
you have your podcast platform, make it happen.
All right, well, I'm down with that. We'll put it on Paul's Twitter and we'll run with it a little bit later on. But I think my favorite one is definitely the you know, preparing the children for the road, not the road for the children. But there's another one where he's sort of talking about how I think it was Wayne Selden play, where Wayne Selden dived for the ball or did something that, you know, some sort of harder sort of play where Jim Boylan got really excited about it, and how it made Boylan really want to get out there and dive on someone or something of that nature. I wish I had wording in front of me, but oh my God, that was amazing.
Yeah. See, this is what I'm saying. And like, maybe I just kind of have a different perspective on this than you do, because I am not actually a Bulls fan.
Yeah.
Like I lived in Chicago for several years, and I spent a lot of time around the team, and I still have a lot of connections there, but I don't have the emotional investment in being a fan of the team and really caring whether they win or lose. I'm just here for the entertainment value. And I don't think there's any coach they could possibly have hired that would provide more entertainment value than we're getting out of Jim Boylan. So like, I'm all about this. Just as an impartial outsider, like I totally understand. Like if you're a Bulls fan and you're like, when are they going to start contending for a championship again? I can totally see how Jim Boylan's going to drive you up the wall, because I don't think he's going to be the coach that's going to lead them back to contending anytime soon. But you know, in to quote a great philosopher, this is tremendous content.
Well, I mean, it is, and I've got that Wayne Selden quote. I pulled it up. So it is those plays that Wayne did. That makes me want to play again. It does something to your nervous system. It makes you want to go out and dive on somebody. I mean, whatever, Jim.
That's so good. I love it. That's so good.
He's a crackpot. I'll give him that. If nothing else, he like you said, he provides good content. But Sean, you've definitely given me good content too, mate. I appreciate you jumping on the line and reviewing this weird and long and just crazy bull season with me. It's fun to go back over these sorts of things, and I'm glad we didn't necessarily dive into the minutiae, because that would have been painful. But I appreciate you coming on, and before you get away, tell people where they can follow you online. They're probably already doing so if they're listening to this show, but just hit them up one more time.
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Hyken, which is just my last name, Highkin. You just follow me on there. Whenever I write something, I'll tweet it out. I'm here in Portland still, and so the Blazers Thunder series is tipping off on Sunday, so I'll have coverage from there. However long that goes, I don't know how long the Blazers are going to still be at the playoffs, but I'll be there. So just kind of look out for that in the next couple of weeks. I'll have some other playoff coverage coming up, and then you know who knows what the future is going to hold after that.
Yeah, man. I'll be tuning into your Portland coverage. Portland is one of those teams that I really do enjoy. Dame Lillard, I don't know how anyone could dislike him as a player. I really hope they do quite some good things in the playoffs. And for your sake, obviously, hopefully they hang around deep. That way you've got that playoff coverage coming through. But like I said, I appreciate you jumping on and talking Bulls with me, even though you're not necessarily covering the Bulls like you used to. I appreciate the fact that you're still able to find the funny side or the humorous side of this, like I said, this long and crazy Bulls season. So thanks again, mate.
Yeah, good to talk to you, man.
So that was Sean Hyken, folks, and that was the Bulls season. 2018-19 is in the books. Thank God for that. We're done. We don't have to worry about it. We don't have to think about this season too much more, which I'm very pleased with. We can move on to full draft and off-season coverage, which is what I plan on doing going forward on this podcast. I'm sure we'll allude to this season in patches, but ideally, like Jimmy Butler said, he doesn't look in the rearview mirror, so we won't be doing that here on Bulls HQ. We'll be talking draft and the off-season ahead. Look, and to be honest with you, that's probably what you want to hear anyway, rather than this stupid season. So that's what we'll be focusing on. We'll be back probably next week at some stage, I'm tipping. I don't know what my schedule will be like, but generally every week there'll be a Bulls HQ episode dropping in the usual spots. As always, follow the show on Twitter at Bulls HQ Pod. Follow me at MK Hoops on Twitter. Appreciate you guys hanging in there with me all season. I know it's a tough season to go through where the Bulls are losing so heavily and there's not really much interest in this team, but if you were one of the rare few that were tuning into Bulls HQ every week, I really do sincerely appreciate your support. It means the world to me, so shout out to everyone listening. I really do appreciate it. We'll be back again next week, so until then, speak soon.